Blog Talk Radio.
And good morning. Welcome to another exciting edition of Marketing Pulpit International, New York edition with yours truly, Dennis D. Shipman on the Mid-Eye. Hey, listen, it's rainy outside, about 60 degrees, so it's kind of muggy, rainy, chilly. I don't know. With 60 degrees, it should be nice and warm. But at any rate, we're going to warm it up here in the studios of MPI, New York. Hope you had a good weekend. I had a great one. Finally got a chance to go to the African American Museum. I've been wanting to go for quite some time. And through the ministry I attend, the church, one of the brothers managed to get tickets. So I hadn't seen my son in quite some time. By quite some time, I mean I took him home at the beginning of January. And my personal and professional schedule doesn't permit me to pick him up as often as I would like. So I figured this would be an opportune moment to get him, because it's sort of educational and certainly, you know, a reunion of sorts where I get to spend some time with my child. And it's really unbelievable. I wrote I posted something on the church's Facebook page about the event. The museum is really majestic in design and certainly in scope. And when you think you've finished looking at something, there's another corner to turn, another cul-de-sac. And the other part of the, you know, I wasn't surprised or shocked, but it was really a lot of Europeans, Caucasians, white people, however you want to characterize them, and as well, you know, in a way, and I don't want to say it like that, but I was, you know, it was really a lot of Caucasians in there. I was really surprised that they are so interested in African-American oppression. But it was an interesting trip, and I have to go back. My child, you know, he has attention span of an 8-year-old, so you know, save for a few. And fortunately for me and him, they had exhibits that were large enough to capture his attention for however brief a minute. So he was able to see some things, and they have some even interactive games. They had a step exhibit, you know, for the Greeks, the Black Greeks, fraternities and sororities. When you pledge, some fraternities have specific step shows that they like to perform, and so they had this interactive display. You step up on it, and you can follow along as the guy is teaching you, or girl, it depends on what you decide to interact with, you know, a sorority or fraternity, and how to do a specific step. And then they had a huge interactive history board. My child loved that one because it was a, you know, graphic user interface, you know, a touchscreen. So you just touch it. And goes to, you know, a point in history, and typically there's a 5, 10, 15-second video associated with that particular video. So I thought it was amusing and educational, instructive educational, you know. So it was really, 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 really interesting, to say the least. They, you know, and I didn't notice, I was listening to some young guys in there, you know, look like college students, and they were talking about, yeah, we're going to see the Cassie. And I said, Cassie, who's Cassie would be in the museum? You know, I hadn't been there, and I'm not aware of all the exhibits. And it was Emmett Till, you know, who was, if you don't remember or don't know your history, he was murdered in 1955 in Mississippi for allegedly whistling at a white woman. He was all of 15, lived in Chicago, and was sent down from Chicago for the summer to stay with his uncle, and drug out of the house later that evening after the alleged fatal flirtatious gesture brutally tortured and killed, and the mother was describing the condition of the remains, and it was horrific. It was even worse than you seen. And it was a little picture in the casket, not a little picture, but and it was gruesome. Absolutely, it was like it was on the Time magazine, but even worse. I mean, and how man can do that to man, or a man could do that to a child, just shows the depth of hatred that these people have for us. And, you know, I joined a group on Facebook, and, you know, Facebook is very addictive, so you have to be careful about, you know, marshaling your time and how much time you're spending on these social media channels. Because I was doing a lot on Google, too, but Google, too, is, you know, it's like really a niche performer in the social media market. Facebook and Twitter certainly are still the big boys. So at any rate, I joined this group of Black Fathers in response to a segment that I seen on NBC, I believe, last week, Friday, Saturday. I'm not really sure when I seen it. It was started by a young, disaffected Black father who felt he was getting short shrift. And so, you know, I certainly empathize, and apparently so did a million other guys, because they quickly signed up, and they have some interesting forums on here. You know, questions that are posed by, you know, brothers, and it's not only brothers. It's a lot of Hispanics, which could be Black or white. I'm sure some Caucasians, because, you know, they, you know, have this insatiable curiosity about everything. So I'm sure that they're on there as well. But one of the brothers posed a question that I had to respond to, talking about, and I'm paraphrasing, obviously, that, you know, should he teach his son about Black history, because, I mean, this had to be tongue-in-cheek. I can't believe that anyone seriously posted this. I just can't. It was too provocative. Because he didn't want his son to form, quote-unquote, negative opinions about other races. And my head almost blew off. I was like, this is a Black group about Black fathers, and about their sons and their daughters, and you're wondering what the dominant society's views are towards us. And we just finished talking about Emmett Till. So that happened in 1955, which would have been roughly 62 or 63 years ago, if I got my math right. That's not a great deal of time. That's less than, you know, two generations. And for him to post that, it shows me that either, one, he's totally oblivious to American history, or, two, he was just being provocative and wanted to post something just for the sake of garnering some reaction. So I posted what I posted, and a couple of brothers wrote back in support of what I said, you know, which was basically what I'm saying now, that, you know, you really got to know your history if you don't believe for a second that, you know, we aren't treated, you know, unfairly at best, discriminated against at worst in these United States. You know, I remember, you know, because my son is 8, he'll be 9 in a couple of months. And I remember growing up in a small town in Long Island, Suffolk County, and my mother used to allow me to, you know, I was a pretty precocious child, precocious, you know, go to the doctor's office, which was right down on the main street, you know, at 8, she, you know, it wasn't the world that we live in now. And so, you know, everybody in the town knew each other, literally. I mean, you couldn't walk up the street without seeing someone that you knew in school. And there was a tremendous amount of role models in this town, you know, doctors, lawyers, you know, pharmacists, dentists. So, you know, I seen Black people who were, by all objective measures, extraordinarily successful. And this isn't, you know, aging myself, but, you know, this is going back, 40 years or so. So at any rate, I walk into the doctor's office. Dr. Dunmore was our primary care physician back then. I still remember him. What we call a high yellow fella, light-skinned brother, MD, well-spoken, obviously. And I'm sitting in the waiting room by myself, and a young white girl walks in with her mother, and they engage in some conversation. I'm looking at Muzak on the speakers and glancing through magazines, just looking around. I'm sitting in there. I presented my insurance card, and I was just waiting to get called in for my physical or whatever I was there for. And she said something to her mother to the effect that there aren't any cute boys in here. Now, at 8, I was still a cute little boy, but because I was at that time, black or Negro or African American, Afro American, she didn't consider me to be suitable enough for her attentions and express as much to her mom's. So I looked up and I didn't think anything of it except to think that, wow, that's pretty racist, even at that point, because I was a pretty smart kid. And I recognized the slight for what it was. I didn't think for a second that I was an acute kid. I thought exactly what I was meant to think, that this young white girl didn't look at me, a cute little black boy, as potential partner. And I think that shaped my perception from that point on about how the broader society interacts with us, because, I listen to other broadcasts, none as good as ours, Mark and Pulpit International. And I set it off here on Mondays at 10:30 to 11, but we have a whole host, if I could use that, no pun intended, of hosts, of co-hosts, up and down the dial throughout the week, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, we have a sports show. So you got to tune in and catch us Monday through Saturday. Typically the show's there from 10:30 to 11, but go online, Marketing Pulpit International, and check out our schedule. You should see our masthead up there with a bunch of us. Last time I looked, my picture had been removed. I don't know why. Don't ask me why. I have absolutely no idea. But you can get the schedules and all of our hosts, and I know most of them have fantastic shows, and they provide information that will benefit you, educate you, certainly make you think, absolutely, and provide you with the tools and the resources necessary to become successful in your chosen field of endeavor. Typically, if you're self-employed, an entrepreneur, or seeking to become an entrepreneur, a lot of the shows are focused on the business end of doing that, which is, quite expensive. You really have to have done your homework before you launch into some sort of business, especially us. I want to talk about that briefly, because I had a conversation with a friend of mine that took a buyout from the government, had worked here for whatever, 20, 25 years, and purchased a laundry mat and promptly lost it because, the person was undercapitalized, even though they had the money to, and I don't know if they recoup any of their investment. I didn't get into that with them. I need to, ask that question. Let's take a break and talk about this more on the other side of the break. We're at the Marketing Pulpit International with yours truly, Dennis D. Shipping on the mic.
Looking for a hip multimedia management company that can manage you, your service, product, or your next multimedia project? Let East New York Management take you, your service, or your product to the next level. At East New York Management, we can produce and post-produce your product. project into a sleek finished product. We write scripts, slow-mo, blurs, and spots that are tight, hot, and funky. Liners that flow smoothly with wit as well as with verb. We also manage talent, produce, and post-produce shows that are on the cutting edge, reflecting the undeniable influence of hip-hop on popular culture. The most important thing that we can bring to your product is energy, enthusiasm, and a love for the creative process. Look for us on the World Wide Web at www.eastnewyorkmanagement.net. Call us at 347-846-8447 or email us at contact@eastnewyorkmanagement.net. Do not waste another minute with whack, boring, and uncreative multimedia and talent management companies. Bring your talent or project to East New York Management. Let East New York Management take you, your service, or your product to the next level.
And we're back here in the Marketing Pulp International, New York. This is yours truly, Dennis D. Shipman on the mic. 1047 and 60 degrees here in Brooklyn, New York. Overcast, rainy. And it shouldn't be chilly because it's 60 degrees, but it is kind of chilly. I'm kind of bushed. I've been up since and ripping and running basically all weekend, but I couldn't get any sleep. I was up since about 3:44. So I went in and I said, well, let me go in my office. And I went in and I meditated. And, you know, whatever else I did, meditated, prayed, basically. And then just got up and got myself together and got my kid up and, you know, took him home. He's about 100 miles from here. So that's a haul whenever I have to get him, you know. And you know, the flip side of it is that, you know, the traffic and the rain, you know, which is why I had to leave relatively early because there's no way I would have gotten him back on time. And as it stood, you know, we had time to get breakfast and that sort of thing. You know, it's important, at least for me. I'm not looking for affirmation and that sort of thing, to spend that time, that quality time with your child. You guys can call in. We're live today. Guest call-in line is 215-383-3872. Again, that number is 215-383-3872. So we were talking on the other side of the break about a friend of mine that had taken a buyout, was in the federal merit system for quite some time, as a financial expert. I kid you not. You know, somebody that dealt with fiscal issues and accounting and ledgers and books and all that good stuff. I don't know if that's the person's background, but certainly that's what they did for the vast majority of their career. And so when they got the buyout, they were smart enough to invest in the business, but I don't think they had done their homework. But then again, I didn't, because the same exact issues which they were confronted, I was confronted with in another business, totally unrelated, in a wholly separate area. Both these businesses were on the East Coast. But they were in wholly unrelated areas, I mean industry areas, and in different states. And one of them is you know, when you buy these businesses, if they're already established, you got to worry about the community. And in my case, the community I thought was pretty decent was not at all. I mean, we were getting broken into so often, I started to put a mattress and a blanket out there for the guy, you know, because it didn't make sense for him to continue to break my window. He might as well just came in and slept there and then robbed me and left in the morning. The police were absolutely unhelpful. As a matter of fact, and this echoes their sentiments as well. I mean, literally, the police had the gall to get annoyed with me because I said, well, what took you guys so long? Guy got in his car and sped off. I kid you not. Both of them. It was, you know, I guess they were pardoned up. Typically, in this particular area, you know, the cops usually ride by themselves, but in this particular event, or maybe they had two cars that just seemed, you know, in the haze of my ire, that they were riding together. But that's what they did. I seen the guy just, you know, at least one of them just get into the car and speed off. I kid you not. Oh, we'll be right back, and got into the car and left. I mean, no explanation on that. I mean, after, if I'm needing to the police to my business, I mean, literally beating them there to the building where which has an active burglar alarm, you know something is wrong, especially when you can walk to the police station from my business. I kid you not. There is only one police station in this city. It's a very, very small city. So they only have one police station. Everyone dispatches from this one police station. I'm sure they have substations throughout the city. I'm unaware of any. But what I can tell you is that their headquarters is within walking distance of my my business at that point. And, you know, so I'm saying all this to say that this, you know, these experiences, you know, echo the experiences of this person, you know, this friend of mine that I was talking about, because they told me they went through the very same thing and finally, you know, finally had to shutter the business. So, you know, location is important, but not for the reasons we've been traditionally told. It's, you know, for your own safety as well. I mean, and I don't think that part of it is emphasized as near as enough as the traffic situation and parking and, you know, are you going to get that walk-in trade that could really boost your bottom line significantly enough to carry you in those lean times. So we made money, but not nearly enough. We just would be breaking even every month at that point, you know, if you can't hold on because you don't have a bridge loan, then you just lose. And so I lost through stupidity. I admit it. I made a lot of errors, and I've learned from my errors. I really have. And the one thing that we've done here at East New York Management knows that I want to know what we got to do or what we do. At East New York Management. You can go online and see us at www.eastnewyorkmanagement.net. Again, that URL is www.eastnewyorkmanagement.net. And is that we've reduced our overhead as much as possible. I mean, really down to bare bones. Because every successful business that I know, I mean, you know, especially minority-owned, you know, Hispanic, woman, disabled, minority, you know, a veteran, you know, that sort of thing. If they did not own the building, they knew the person that did. In other words, they had a sweetheart deal on the rent, or they owned the building. Typically, though, the most successful businesses I know, whether they were barbers, cosmetologists, or whatever, they either worked out of their house or they owned the building in which they, or they, you know, now, you know, with the advent of the internet over the last, I would say, 30 years or so, you know, to going back to the 90s. I mean, you know, obviously the internet has been around since the 60s, but, I mean, you know, commercially, it's gained widespread acceptance in commerce here in the United States, and I would say about the, you know, the early 90s, you could go virtual. So we've talked a lot about that over the past few shows, but you know, we're still, you know, grappling with what we want to do. Do we want to expand existing facilities, or do we want to go totally virtual? And I think that, you know, we could do what a lot of people do and just, you know, rent office space as we need it if we can't buy this building, which again, you know, begs the question of, you know, how do we finance, you know, real estate in New York is extraordinary. Even in the area, I mean, we're in East New York, which is not considered a very, you know, desirable area in Brooklyn. You know, I wrote a piece about that in my book that I've been working on for the last 3-4 years. It's about gentrification. And even the bad areas of the city have become so extraordinarily expensive that, you know, looking for suitable space. And I was listening to the radio today, and this is absolutely the truth, and this is way before my time. You know, if I could have done it, I wouldn't have been able to have done it, because even back then, you know, if you adjust the amount of money that you're talking by, you know, the index, the rate of inflation, you know, you're still probably talking close to $700,000-$800,000. I'm not sure. So don't quote me as gospel. I'd literally have to run a calculator, and I'm sure they have those conversion tools to see how much X amount of money is worth in the 1960s to now. But at any rate, there was this gentleman that brought a building in the Bowery, which anybody knows about in New York, that's on the edge of the Chinatown, on his literally Bowery, that's what it's called now. It's all restaurant supply stores down there. And $460,000, and just sold it for $28K and retired. You know, I'm sure he's much older now, you know, because in the 60s, if he brought it, he was around and had that kind of money. If his parents didn't leave it to him, then, you know, he had to be, you know, either well-established or well-heeled. So we're going to talk more about that in the coming weeks, and you keep it coon right here on the Marketing Pulpit International, and have a great week.
Welcome. Welcome.
Yo, what's up, world? We are the good people. We invite you to join us on this musical journey through space and time and the music of my mind. We're out to change the world one song at a time, yo. Come on for the ride.
Your body is the epicenter.